Remember, we're going to allow artists to make her presentation so that she can keep her train of thought, but we will allow time for questions at the end. So without any further ado, we'll turn it over to Artist Bazin, Chair of the ACB Membership Committee.
Thank you, Debbie. I'm going to first start with the secretary position and then go to the treasurer. And some of it you might find duplicative because some of the jobs, different chapters do differently depending on the abilities of the person. So if you hear something twice, it's because of that reason. The secretary is the person that is the one that's responsible for taking notes at all the meetings because the minutes are a part of the record that needs to be kept for your organization in order to be consistent in all of your activities. I always suggest that secretaries use a tape recorder as well as taking notes because that way if the tape malfunctions, you still have the notes. And if your notes aren't clear, you can listen to the tapes after you come home from the meeting. After you get home from the meeting, you need to try to do your minutes as soon as possible, because that way, if something's not clear, it's easier to understand it later when you listen to it. Because if something happens where the tape isn't clear or your notes aren't clear, you're more likely to remember it if you do it soon after the meeting. When you take minutes, you should always be clear you have all the motions wording correctly. If you're not clear at the meeting, make sure you ask the president to repeat the motion or the person who made the motion repeat the motion so that you make sure that you get it clear in your notes. When you take notes, you should list the time that the meeting actually started, the date of the meeting, where you had the meeting, etc., as well as the when you do the roll call, make a note of who's attending the meeting. Now, some chapters in the minutes, they don't say who's all at the meeting. They just might say something like there's a quorum present, which means that you have at least one more than half of your members at the meeting. And it's important to be able to take the role at any board meeting that you have to make sure that you have enough officers or board members present whenever you have a board meeting. In regular chapters, it's not as important to take the names down, but at board meetings, you should definitely have the names of who was at the board meeting. At each meeting, the secretary is generally asked to read the minutes from the prior meeting, and you need to make sure that you have the appropriate motions all written in those minutes and also some other information that you've taken down in the minutes. Some people take way too many minutes when they write down their notes. They write down every single discussion, and that's not important. Your motions should be listed, as well as if you make any other decisions by consensus. If you plan events, times, dates, etc., those should be in the minutes. And if you make any other decisions, even if there's not a formal vote, you need to write down those decisions. And if there's been tasks that were asked to be done, for example, if the president has set forth a new committee, an ad hoc committee, or has asked particular people to do certain things, for example, you might have a Christmas party that you're trying to plan, and the president might ask certain people to take that responsibility for making plans, you want to note those kind of things in the minutes. So basically, it's just everything that's important to remember for the future. You also might want to write down the time the meeting closed as well. When you read the minutes at a later meeting, people will be asked to make corrections and ask if they have any questions or whatever. If they come up, you should also make note of things that you had inaccurately before on the previous records. You want to make sure you note that. When you make notes about the Treasury's report, it's only important for the Secretary to get the beginning balance, the amount of receipts, the amount of expenses, and the closing balance. You don't have to have the other information written down because the Treasurer will cover that in his report. Okay, after a meeting, sometimes the President might ask the Secretary for a copy of the meeting minutes sooner than the next meeting if he or she hasn't taken notes at the meeting. Generally, most Presidents do, but some will not, and they'll like the Secretary to give them maybe a summary so they remember what they said they were going to take care of before the next meeting. But that's kind of something that you and the President can work out ahead of time, so that you know what, you know, the timeline of what they'd like to have minutes. Otherwise, for chapters, just having your minutes available at the next meeting is usually okay. Occasionally, you might have a person that wants a copy of the minutes, and if they're a member, they are allowed to have a copy of minutes if they like. It doesn't generally happen too often, but occasionally someone might. In some chapters, the Secretary is the person that's responsible for handling the membership list. I'm not sure how your chapters do that, but if you do handle your membership list, you need to make sure you keep it accurate and up to date. You want to make sure you get the name, address, email address, phone number of each person, as well as the type of format they want for their state newsletter, as well as their Braille forum. And you also want to make a note of whether they're blind, visually impaired, or whether they're sighted, because you'll need that for your mailing. When you mail your newsletters, if they're sighted people, you have to put postage on them, whereas everyone that's legally blind, you can send them free matter. You should also note if they're a new member, because some organizations send new members a welcome letter or a handbook that tells them about the organization. I know we in California have what we call a membership handbook. And it just tells about all the committees and different things members can get involved in, and just tells them about all the chapters that are around the state, et cetera, a little bit more about the organization. So that sometimes is helpful if you note that they're a new member. If you also check when you get your list of dues from the treasurer or whoever collects the dues, it's good to send a follow-up letter to people who don't send in their dues, just as a reminder that their dues should be sent in by a particular date. And it's also good to keep in touch with people, because if you don't send them a reminder letter or a phone call is even better, then they might not know that they were actually ever missed. So it's always good to keep in touch. When you have your membership list, you and your treasurer need to keep in touch about who's paid dues, and to make sure that you are both have the same notes. Sometimes what will happen is they might not pass information back and forth, and people will complain down the road that they didn't get a copy of the newsletter. Sometimes different chapters do it differently as far as who sends the information into your state, but just make sure that one of you sends in the correct information to your state, either the secretary or the treasurer, to make sure that they're all up to date and so you don't have anybody not getting their information that they need. Correspondence also can be handled differently in different chapters. Sometimes the secretary does all the correspondence, while sometimes the president might handle some correspondence, or some chapters might have even a separate corresponding secretary. So that kind of depends on your chapter. And it's always good to talk to your president about it, and so you both don't assume that the other one is taking care of correspondence. It's also a good thing to keep a copy of correspondence that you send out. Of course, that's especially easy if you have a computer. Just have a folder that you keep your chapter correspondence in. So if something comes up later, then you know that someone has corresponded. That's especially important for getting in touch with speakers if you have, you know, special events, or even speakers for your regular chapter meeting. It's good if you can use a letterhead stationery for any of your letters you've written. And that's easy to do. You can just make one yourself. Just make sure you put your name of your organization, your name, your address, and just put it in centered at the top of the page. So you don't have to have formal letterheads, but some kind of a letterhead is always good. It makes you look much more professional. Now, some chapters, the secretary files the incorporation papers if you have a corporation, and sometimes the treasurer handles these filings. And sometimes chapters don't have incorporation papers. The good reason to have them is sometimes if you have a bill that's not paid, officers of your organization can be responsible if your organization's not incorporated. And it's not that difficult to do. You just do it through your Secretary of State or your Attorney General's office in your state. The same thing with 501c3. Some chapters may want to have their own, and others are under their state. And I think you said last time that your chapters have to have their own. Is that right, Debbie?
Some of them do.
Okay, okay. And if you do it under the state, then it's important. If you use their number when you're doing fundraisers, the state number, then you have to let the state know what fundraisers you've done throughout the year so that they can add it onto their 990 that they have to file. And usually the treasurer does this, but sometimes the secretary will keep the IRS filing documents, the incorporation papers, et cetera. Sometimes the secretary is the one who keeps all files of anything. It's just important that everyone knows who's keeping what papers, because some of these, if you lose them, it's very difficult to get them back, especially the 501c3. So the incorporation papers also need to be filed annually, biannually, triannually. It depends on your state. And you might want to check to make sure what your status is and how often you need to do that. There again, that's a duty that could be either secretary or treasurer. Secretary should also keep a copy of your constitution and bylaws and make sure that it's kept up to date with each time that you've made changes, because you want to make sure that you've got those on hand if people ask what's in the Constitution. And some constitutions actually say specific duties of secretaries and treasurers, and some are just vague. They might say the secretary's duties are what's normally secretary's duties according to Robert's Rules of Orders. So that's kind of up to your chapter if you want to be more specific in your documentation. Sometimes some like to get a little more formal to make sure that it's clear exactly what the duties are, and some, you know, just rely on people to do the right thing, and or rely on the president to make sure things are done. If you happen to have a special seal, the secretary would probably keep in control of that too. But most times chapters don't have those. It's usually more of a state thing. Official minutes should be kept for a minimum of 5 years, although some chapters keep them longer just as part of your history, and that's totally up to you. It's sometimes helpful if you can keep your motions as a separate file, so that way it might be easier to find a motion that you've made in the past, but it's not necessary as long as you keep the minutes. It just makes it more work later when somebody's trying to find out about a motion that was passed maybe a couple of years ago. Might be harder to find. If your chapter does resolutions, you also need to keep a file of those, because sometimes resolutions set policy. Although most often in chapters, resolutions are more ones that are brought forward to your state organization. So it's just important to have them for your reference in the future. Secretaries should also keep a list of all of the people that you send mailings to. Sometimes you might want to do fundraisers where you're sending out letters to people who aren't members, and you'll want to keep those mailing lists up to date as well. Sometimes it's important to have a disk library of all of your stuff at a separate location in case you have a fire, your computer dies or whatever. Of course, backup is always important too, but if you have a fire or something like that, that's not going to help. So if you have some of your important documents kept at a different location. Some people file them in online locations. There's some different online facilities that are available where you can send files up there and keep up so other people can access them besides just the secretary too. We're going to move on to the treasurer now. The treasurer, of course, is the person that is in charge of all the financial accounts of the organization. They would be the person in charge of opening and maintaining any checking accounts. If you move to a new treasurer and they're in a different location, and it would be easier for them to do that checking account somewhere else, you would need to have the federal tax ID number that your original account was started in order to open a new account at another bank. If you open an account without a federal ID number, it's put under your Social Security number as treasurer, and if your account earns any interest, it would automatically be counted as your income, even though it's not. So that's why it's real important to make sure you open any account with your federal ID number. If you haven't had a federal ID number in the past, it's very easy to get one. You just have to fill out an application. You just usually need the names of your officers of your organization, and sometimes they might need a constitution or something. It depends on your status that you're filing under. If you're 501c3, sometimes it's a little different. Whenever you have any checking or savings accounts for your chapter, you need to make sure you keep very good records. You need to make sure that each check is written down and each savings deposit and expense is written down so that there is a clear record of what's happened if there's ever someone that's asked for an audit, or if someone's not clear of what's been happening in the past, you should make sure that you have everything clear so that if there's an audit trail. When you do any transaction at all, you should have the approval of either the president or the board of your chapter or the membership in your chapter. You have to have approval by someone before you can write out any check to anyone, whether that's president or the whole group. You know, that's up to your chapter. Some chapters are real strict that they require that the membership vote on everything, whereas there's other chapters that allow the president to make many of the decisions as long as they're not, you know, very large expenses, that then they might need the chapter to approve those. When you get your bank statement at the end of each month, you need to make sure you reconcile it and understand everything that's written on the check on the bank statement. You want to check the charges, make sure you weren't charged anything you shouldn't have been, and follow up with the bank if you have been charged charges that you shouldn't have been charged. You want to make sure that all of the checks agree and that you want to add the charges of your bank, like if your bank has a monthly charge, you know, make sure you add that to your records so that your records are always agree with what the bank statement says. And some banks even have on their bank statements even have a little reconciliation form that you can use if you're able to read it. That can be of help for you when you're reconciling. One of the things that's real important whenever you take a new position as a treasurer, that you understand what exactly is required of you. Sometimes chapters do things in a different manner, and even if you've been a treasurer of another chapter or another group, there might be different ways that your organization expects you to handle it. So you might want to make sure that you understand what the rules are as far as keeping what things on file. Some chapters require a receipt for every check. Other chapters have a budget where as long as it's on the budget, the check is enough. So you need to make sure that you understand that when you become treasurer. Another thing that the treasurer is often responsible for is doing an annual budget. Now, some chapters don't have an annual budget, but it's always a good practice to have one. The main reason for a budget is to make sure that you're not spending money too fast for what you're taking in. And it's easier to do if you don't have a budget, because then you don't have a comparison between what you're taking in as receipts and what you're paying out in bills. All you have is your monthly treasurer's reports, and you don't have anything to compare them against. Whereas if you have a budget, then you can look at that, and then at a meeting you might say, well, hey, our budget is way out of line. Our expenses are a lot higher than what we originally anticipated at the beginning of the year. So that's something to consider. If you do a budget, it's important to have a committee that talks to the different committee chairs in your chapter to make sure that you find out exactly what they're going to do during the next year. So it's easier to set a budget if you kind of know what the possible projects are. You can also go by your previous year's budget and add or delete items that aren't relevant any longer. That's a good way to do it. Another thing that the treasurer is responsible generally for is keeping track of all the fundraisers. Generally, the treasurer is on the fundraising committee just so they know exactly what the expenses are and can keep track of them. Of course, if you use a professional fundraiser, you're going to have a separate account for that so that you can take their expenses out of that account. But most chapters generally do fundraisers where they can put them in the bank account with everything else. They just make a note on their treasurer's reports what things are for what fundraiser. That way they can go back later and check to see if the fundraiser is doing well. So you want to make sure that you don't want to continue doing a fundraiser if you're not making any money from it, obviously. When you're doing your treasurer's report for your monthly meeting, you want to make sure that you give the beginning balance, a list of the expenses in categories, and a list of your receipts in categories, as well as your ending balance. Now, this can be a summary and just cover that much, but the treasurer also needs to be able to tell what the receipts were or what the exact expenses were. For example, if you come and you say, well, I have $1,000 in postage and $500 in delegate fees, well, they might wonder, what in the world are you spending $1,000 for in postage? So it's important to always be able to answer any question that might come up in your meeting about why a certain category is so high. And sometimes chapters just give all their expenses and receipts because some chapters don't have a lot of them, so it's just as easy just to read them as it is to put them in categories. So that's kind of up to your chapter. It depends on how much you spend to take in as to what makes your meeting run smoothly. Because obviously you don't want to take up half a meeting reading a treasurer's report. Okay, here again, the treasurer needs to make sure that he keeps all the information about the membership list. I think it's important for the treasurer to also keep track of the person's name, address, phone number, email address, because if the secretary isn't available, then you have a second person that has that list, unless you actually have a membership secretary or someone who keeps the list that's separate, because I think it's good for more than one person to have these lists. And it might be a president, too. Chapters depends on who has what kind of ability and who has a computer or who has the time, etc. So some of these duties can be given to other people besides the secretary and treasurer, just as long as you have enough people handling it that you can keep them up to date. Of course, it's important for the treasurer to keep track of the dues for each member. And as I mentioned in the secretary, you might want to send a note for a reminder, and that you can decide among you which person it's easier to send out a note as a reminder, or just to call people in chapters, especially smaller chapters. If you only have a dozen, 18 people, it's easy just to call people and say, hey, I didn't receive your dues. I'd like to just give you a reminder. It's not only good to remind people, but it's also a good thing because sometimes people just forget, or they feel like nobody cares about them, so why bother paying dues? Nobody cares anyway. So it's good for two reasons, you know, not just for getting your dues in on time, but also for keeping people in touch. It's also important to make a note when people donate on your list of members. Make a note if they've made a donation in the past, because that might mean they might be willing to make a donation in the future. Same with all your donations that you receive from other people that aren't members. Make sure you keep a list of those. And I don't know if your chapter sends out letters for fundraising. I know some chapters might not send out a letter for fundraising, but they might send a chapter letter out for getting door prizes for events or something. It's important to keep those lists up to date so that you can send them out more quickly. Otherwise, if each time you have to come up with a list, it takes a lot more time. Each state has different tax requirements. If you have raffles or a fundraiser where you need to pay sales tax on, you need to be aware of what you need to pay sales tax on. A lot of states require you to pay sales tax on anything that's considered gambling. So those are real important to make sure you keep track of. Other fundraisers, generally there's not sales tax on things like barbecues and so forth, but you might want to check with your state revenue department and find out exactly what their rules are as far as what you have to pay in your particular state. And the same thing is true as far as incorporation papers and your filing of those, as well as doing, if you have a 501c3, filing your 990s. Treasurer will usually be the person responsible for filing 990s. The incorporation papers, it depends on the group, because sometimes you want someone that's going to be there, living there for a long time. So sometimes you might have a lawyer do that, in fact, for your incorporation papers. But then 990s, of course, the treasurer would be the best person to fill those out. And those have begun to be a lot longer than they used to be. They ask a lot more information than they used to ask, and sometimes organizations now, even if they're a small organization, you still have to file a 990. It's just sometimes a 990 EZ So you need to find out, you know, what you're responsible for if you have a 501c3. Okay, if you're selling tickets to any event, generally the treasurer is the one who keeps track of how many tickets are sold. Like if you have a Christmas party or if you have a barbecue or whatever, and you sell tickets in advance, the treasurer is the one who takes care of that. And if you do have a fundraising committee that's actually handling that, you have to make sure that they give you the money in a timely manner and that it gets reported accurately for your records. Because occasionally you might have a fundraising committee that actually isn't that handy with doing the financial things. So just be aware of what's happening so that you can make sure that you have the proper records you need for your treasurer's reports.
Treasurer keeps track of tickets and what? And
well, like if you have expenses that need to be paid for a fundraiser, but the fundraising person, the committee is taking care of it, you just need to make sure that you get all those receipts for your reports and that you get all those funds that were paid in for the tickets for those events. Because sometimes if two different entities are handling it, it's easy for one to lose track of what, you know, what's happening. So it's real important to, that's why I would suggest that a treasurer be on a fundraising committee. That way they're more involved going along. Do most of your chapters have an audit done at the end of the year to check your records or not?
No.
Our soda.
It's probably a good thing to do. And it doesn't have to be a formal auditing committee, just a couple of, your president could appoint a couple of people in your chapter just to compare the checkbooks with the records and make sure everything looks good. It's actually not that you're trying to be critical of your treasurer. It actually is sometimes helpful for a treasurer because if they find, if they note that things are not recorded very clearly, they might be able to give them some assistance on suggesting a better way to record certain things so it's clearer at the end of the year. So it's a good thing for a treasurer because then that way they might catch something before it gets to be too far down the road and then you don't know what's happening. But generally, if you do your monthly reconciliation with your bank statements, you shouldn't have any problem, and an audit should be real simple to do at the end of the year. One thing for all officers of the organization, of course, you all have the fiduciary responsibility of your chapter. So even if you're not the president, you're not the vice president, you have to be aware of what's happening with the chapter all across the board. Because as board members, you are responsible for your chapter besides your particular duties in your particular office. And that's always one thing that you need to keep in mind. If you see something happening in your chapter, even though it's not typically your responsibility, you are responsible for bringing it to that person's attention so that things go smoothly in your chapter. And it's important for you to ask your president to have an occasional board meeting. I know some chapters might just have, you know, one or two a year. And that's fine. It's just important to occasionally have one just so everybody keeps up to date. And sometimes chapter boards can just email back and forth and share information with one another, too, so that everyone on the board knows what's going on. Because I know as a chapter officer, I'm real uncomfortable if I come to a meeting and all of a sudden some crisis is told me at a chapter meeting that, you know, would have been helpful if I knew about it in advance.
Can I ask a question, Jim, real quick?
Sure.
Okay. Can anybody call, can any of the board members call a board meeting?
Generally, the president calls a board meeting, but if you have a majority of the board that want to have a meeting, then they can tell the president that they'd like a board meeting. So in other words, if you have five people on your board, if three of you ask for it, then the president should have one.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's an emergency board meeting, right?
Well, and it wouldn't, they could just say, hey, we want a regular board meeting. We haven't had one for a while, and we think it's necessary for us to, you know,
perhaps
have one.
Something that they want to bring to the board's attention.
Right, right.
I didn't want to cut in, but in the bylaws that you have, at least 4 board meetings a year?
That depends on your organization. Each chapter probably has separate rules that they have put in their bylaws. And sometimes bylaws don't even specify how many you have to have. But some do. Some say that you have to have 2, 3, 4 a year. Kind of depends on your constitutional bylaws. So you might want to check it and see how many that you're required to have and then just make sure you have that many. The other thing I wanted to briefly touch on was parliamentary procedure. Sometimes not everybody is aware of our parliamentary procedure and how things should be handled. So I like to cover this a little bit, especially for chapters. People become officers even when they've only been in a chapter just a short time. And one of the things that's important to remember that it's always good to have order in your chapter. And generally the president is the one who maintains the order, but officers can help by making sure that they aren't saying anything out of line at a meeting. The other thing is to make sure that you understand the motions. And that's why I mentioned that with the secretary, understanding the motions. And if you, any of you as board members, don't understand the motion, you should make sure that the president is aware that the motion is not stated very clearly. Because it's your responsibility to make sure everyone in the chapter understands what's going on. And it's always the case that majority rules. If the majority of the members vote on something, then that's what takes place. And, of course, any chapter can call a roll call vote. And some of them just have people raise hands or something if they need to have, like, a roll call vote versus calling people's names, because that might be kind of awkward in a chapter, but you might have someone count the raised hand or have a standing vote, you know, whatever's more convenient for you. If you
couldn't
don't,
you also do that by email?
No, not generally. You want to have votes at a meeting. You generally don't want votes on email,
mm-hmm.
unless it's an emergency situation where something has to be planned really quickly. Because the problem with that is probably not all your members are on email, and so then it kind of keeps some of them out of the loop if you make decisions on email.
Well, what I was
Unless
thinking about
the
was
board.
On the board.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the board.
Oh, okay, at the board.
Yes, because all of my board members are on email.
Okay. Well, if you feel comfortable in it, as a board, that's fine. The downside to doing that on email is sometimes misunderstandings can occur on
mm-hmm.
email versus on the phone, because sometimes people, it isn't clear. You know, you don't hear the tone of voice, and so sometimes it can be
right.
taken as a negative when it's a positive. And
mm-hmm.
so that's why I always prefer board meetings by phone. But if it's just one decision you're making, you know, it's probably fine to do that. I think I covered the essentials of Robert's Rules. There's lots of Robert's Rules, and if you've seen copies of my handbooks, I usually have some Robert's Rules at the end, which kind of gives people some ideas of some things that they shouldn't be doing during a meeting. But most of the time, it's just trying to keep people in line, so everybody isn't talking at once. You want to make sure people are asking for the floor, and that's the responsibility of all board members to make sure that you're following that guide. Okay, well, I'm going to open it for questions now.
Yes, I have one. When you open up an account at the bank, do all the board members need to have access to the account? Or just the president and secretary of treasury are the signature that's on there?
Generally, I recommend that you have two signatures on each check, and not on each check, but on each account. The treasurer, and generally it's the treasurer and the president. That way if something comes up as an emergency and the treasurer is not available, the president can also sign on that account. It's not necessary for other people to be signers on the account. They will have to be listed. If you open an account, you will need a form that lists all your current officers for that account. And if you change officers, then you'll have to fill out another form that says you changed them, and then you also have to submit the minutes from the meeting where you made the changes. So if you have a new treasurer, you'll have to bring that form to the bank along with the minutes saying that he is the new treasurer or she is the new treasurer.
But I thought you're supposed to have three signatures, not just two.
If you want three signatures, you can do that. But
it's not
most,
mandatory.
But no. In fact, it's not mandatory to have more than one, but it's prudent to have at least two so that, you know, somebody can conduct business if somebody's sick or out of town or, you know, whatever.
A question I guess I could ask you that, I think as you are saying, is that the signees that are on there, you said the president and the treasurer is the one that could be on the account.
Right.
Because the president is the one that has to oversee all committees and everything that's going on. You're responsible for what's going on in your chapter. Is that
right?
Correct?
But the
right.
treasurer is responsible for the money and the finances. That's
yeah,
what
right.
he or she was elected to do.
Yeah.
So
right.
The president should always defer to the treasurer, and the treasurer needs to know what's going on and make the deposits and the withdrawals. And so the president cannot override the treasurer. That's what that person
no,
is
no,
elected
no.
to do.
No, no, no. The president, the only reason the president is generally a signer is in case of some emergency when the treasurer is not available.
Right.
But the president does not regularly write out checks for the organization. That's the treasurer's responsibility to
right.
do that.
Okay.
And the president has to approve the check for the treasurer to write out, or your chapter would have to approve a check that's written out. And that's why it would not be wise for a president to regularly write out checks, because then they'd be approving their own check writing, which
and Artis, isn't it true that some organizations have a dollar limit? Like they'll say you can write up to $100 or whatever
yeah.
Without approval from the president in case little things need to be done, but then that's always included in the treasurer's report so everybody knows.
That's correct. And that's kind of up to each chapter. I know my chapter is real picky, and they, as president, I'm not even allowed to say that the treasurer can write out a check unless it's voted on at a meeting. So it's kind of depends on each chapter how their constitution is stated. That can be really different from chapter to chapter. Some are real fussy. Everything needs to be approved. And there are some that if they have a budget and there's a line item for postage for $25, the treasurer could write a check out for that at any time when the person that's doing the correspondence needs more stamps or whatever. So you just need to be clear when you're the treasurer what you're allowed to do when you take over that job. Make sure you check your constitution, and if you're not sure, even after reading the constitution, you make sure you check with your board and ask any questions that you need to know in order to be clear on what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do.
I have a question. Okay. Our treasurer is a snowbird. It's in Florida. We don't have regular meetings in the summer, but we do activities in the summer. More informal, and sometimes we have bills. Do we need to make a formal arrangement with our treasurer who is gone? Because she's way up north.
If in that case, it probably would be wise to have another signer.
Yeah.
Because here again, it depends on how your chapter is handling it. If your chapter requires the chapter membership to vote on every expense, then it probably would be fine for the president to write out checks while that person is gone. But if your constitution allows the president to approve checks that are written, then you probably should have a third person signing checks while that person's out of town. So it depends on how your approval process is as to whether you should have an additional person sign the check.
Right.
I think it's important just to cover all bases to have Reese signatures on an account, and then it'll take two signatures to approve the check. Every chapter that I've been in, that's how it's been done, and I see that as vital to any organization, really, to keep honesty.
You're saying that you require two signatures on each check?
Two signatures on each check, yeah.
Wow, that actually is pretty difficult, unless you live really close together, because especially, with people, most of us are blind, and transportation can be a real issue. And if you need to have people get together every time you write a check, that could be make it not very easy to pay things that need to be paid in a timely manner.
My question is that if the treasurer not at the meeting, let's say you have the meetings every month and the treasurer not present at the meeting, how many meetings, how can you keep up the reports?
In most chapters, if the treasurer, and this is true for the secretary as well, if either the secretary or treasurer is not going to be at a meeting, they should email their report to someone else that's going to be at the meeting that can read their report. They can either email it to the president or email it to another board member or just email it to a friend who is willing to read it at the meeting. And obviously, that person won't be able to answer questions that come up about the treasurer's report or about the minutes. But they would at least have it read, and then that way in the future, they could bring up the question at another meeting.
If you miss in three meetings, you will have no minutes.
Yeah, well, that's why it's important for you to give them to somebody else. And it's also the responsibility of the secretary to ask someone else to take the minutes for the meeting when they're not there.
Okay.
Or at least record the meeting for them so they can, write the minutes from their recording.
I think one of the questions is, if a person missed so many board meetings, now you all are saying do it on the phone, but a lot of us do it in person, the ones that, most of the chapter people are close by. I'm realizing that upper Florida, most of you all are in different towns and different areas. But like with my chapter, most of us is, around about the same area. And we all come to our meetings, and all my board members is, close. But if you have a person that missed so many meetings, is there a way what we do, we ask that they, step aside and let somebody temporarily take their position to help out. But if they miss so many meetings, should we ask them to resign or something?
But generally, a lot of times in constitutions, it'll say right in your constitution that if an officer misses three consecutive meetings, that they can be asked to resign from their position. You might have something in your constitution like that. Or the other way you get around it is, obviously, now I don't know how often you have elections. Some chapters do it every year, some do it every 2 years. Obviously, if you do it every 2 years, you might not want to wait till the next time the position comes open. But if it's within the next few months, then, probably the simplest way is just not elect them again.
Ma'am, this is Richie from West Palm Beach. Last meeting, we couldn't make it, but I had somebody authorized to give my report as treasurer, and the secretary gave somebody else authorization to do the same thing.
Right, and that's fine. If you give your reports to someone else, then you're covering your position.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you miss several meetings in a row, that makes it bad for keeping up your reports and keeping aware of what's going on. So
if you have consistently have had problems with different officers doing that, you might be wise to bring up a constitutional change for your chapter. And you can bring up a constitutional change at any time. You just, if it's a change in the Constitution, you just have to bring it up the meeting before and then vote on it at the next meeting. And if it's a bylaw change, generally, you can bring it up at a meeting and vote on it. It depends on, there again, it depends on how your Constitution is worded. Your Constitution generally outlines exactly how you can make changes. And if you have a problem like that, I would advise you to change your constitution to make sure that you have consistent officers.
Artist, this is William Benjamin.
Yes.
You've talked about a number of offices here. And is it acceptable for a person to hold more than one office, like president and treasurer?
There again, it depends on your particular chapter. Now, I wouldn't think president and treasurer would be a good combination because a lot of times the president is the one who gives approval for some of the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
But like combining like your secretary and treasurer, if you're low on people willing to run for office or something like that, might be a better solution than, you know, combining a president with something else.
I guess I'm a little confused because it kind of sounds like what is the purpose of the board of directors if the president has this much leeway, I want to say?
Well, there again, the amount of leeway that's given to the president is based on what the board allows.
Okay.
And based on what the chapter allows.
Okay.
A lot of times what happens is the president is given leeway to approve up to a certain amount, like the president might be allowed to approve expenses, oh, like say up to $100 in between meetings when it's necessary.
Okay.
But generally, most large expenditures, the chapter has to recommend the payment. And like I said, my chapter, our constitution requires the membership to make approval of expenses. So it's different for each group. But
I guess that's what I'm talking about. Like if you want to make large changes as far as either the account or the way that a meeting is run or something like this, it should take a board approval to do something like this. Am I correct in that?
Oh, definitely. If you were, like, okay. For example, if you have been meeting at, let's say you've been meeting at Joe's Cafe down the road for the last 5 years, your president would not be allowed just all of a sudden say, okay, I want to switch our meeting to Wilson's Cafe.
Okay.
I mean, those kind of decisions
okay.
should be made, they should actually be made by your membership, decisions
exactly.
like that,
right.
by the majority vote versus even just your board.
Okay.
Now, obviously, there's other decisions that it would be totally appropriate for your board to make.
Okay.
And those, and I guess you have to decide what things you feel that your board can make decisions on and what things you think would be more appropriate for the chapter members to make the decision on.
Okay.
But our members right now can make a decision. Our board really don't, because we don't have a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
So the members is actually the one that's making it because it's best for the members to do that. So that's what we do. The members are the one that make the decision.
Right. And oftentimes that's the case in chapters, that the members make most of the decisions.
Then what is the purpose of having a board of directors?
The board is usually who's responsible in between meetings, you know, making sure that things are handled in between meetings. And generally the board is also the ones that are either in charge of certain committees or assist in different committees.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is Lorraine Darby Henry. missing. I think what we're asking about, there's a board of directors that's supposed to govern the chapter.
Right.
Where do those people come from? Because I don't have board of directors. I have,
it'd be your officers, like your president, your vice president, secretary, treasurer. Those would be considered the board of directors in your chapter.
That's your board of directors.
But we already, the board, I thought it was supposed to be two different boards.
No.
No. That's what you're considered as a board. Now, some chapters also have, you know, you might have a second vice president, you might have a corresponding secretary, you might have just a board member, too. Depends on the size of the chapter, how many people you have in your board. But basically, it's the officers of your...
That's the board of directors.
Right. That's correct.
I wanted to ask a question, so I know we're getting close, about the federal ID memo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I became president, we already had our account. So I'm
right.
trying to find out about this federal ID number for the account. What is... Because on our account, we have this Florida Council of the Blind on it.
Right.
So now, is there a different number? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the federal ID number is. So you said
that's the number that you have registered with the bank as that tells what it's a name, a particular number that goes with your organization.
Tax-free number.
You know, I know I gave them my social security number and all of that when I went there, but I don't want this to be like my income. So I'll check on that because, you know, that was something that kind of...
Artis, where do people, I think what might help people understand a little better about this federal ID number is where do they go to apply for one? How do they get one? So that, for example, Lorian can take off her social security number and put this number on their account.
You just file for one with the IRS.
But
ID number. There would be an application there that you just have to fill out and bring into your bank. In fact, usually you pick one right up at your bank. A lot of times your bank might have an application there for a federal ID number too.
But I thought we was
the number, Lorian. The number lets the bank know who the money belongs to. Legally, because you've got your social security number on there, the bank is assuming the money belongs to you, even though morally you know it belongs to your chapter. So that's why you need to fill out this form and get this federal tax ID number so that you can remove your social security number and put this number on the account.
Matter of fact, I want to ask you saying something about if we do a fundraiser and we on the FCB, we sort of let FCB on your certificate let you know whatever fundraiser that we are doing.
What you have to do is at the end of the year, you have to fill most state treasurers would probably send you a form to fill out. I know we do here in California anyway. They send each chapter a form to fill out if they've done fundraisers. And then they have to list the total amount they took in for the fundraisers, the expenses, and then their net on the fundraisers. And that's all you have to send in to the state organization if you're using their 501c3.
If you are using our 501c3, we need to know what your fundraisers are. If your chapter has its own 501c3, then you don't have to. But every chapter that belongs to us does pay a yearly assessment, a certain percentage of their fundraisers to the organization.
That's what that $50 is if it's up to a certain amount. If it's over a certain amount, then it's more than $50. But that's what you guys pay to us. When you send in your membership, that's the assessment.
But is there anybody who has not yet proposed a question to Artis?
Debbie, it's Bill Freeman. I would like to get one in.
Well, go for it, Bill.
Actually, I really make it a comment on the two signatures on checks. It's a totally useless idea because you'll have the president signing five checks for the treasurer to avoid the inconvenience, and it doesn't do a thing when you do that. Mm. And that's exactly the end result you'll get. Mm. Is That will happen.
The idea is, the idea must be, though, that the treasurer is the elected person in charge of the funds.
Right.
And they're the person responsible for what goes in and what comes out. And they have to make an accounting before the membership of every dollar that is deposited in that account and where it came from and what it's for and every dollar that goes out of the account. And the president has to respect that.
Debbie?
Yeah.
This is Richie from West Palm Beach.
Yes.
When we went to open our account, they took the ID number from the FCB because we had to show a letterhead.
Good. Fine.
Right.
That's probably how most of your chapters are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially if you're working off of FCB's 501c3 and all of that. Okay, one more question. Anybody?
I really wanted to know about the stock she was talking about. The 401k. That's just for the chapters that have, what is it? It was the 401k. It was a fold something you were talking about.
A 501.
Was it the 501c3 that you're talking about, Lorian?
No, it's I think if you get, like, you got money that you want to invest it.
Oh, okay. No, a 401k wouldn't apply to a chapter unless you hired people, and I don't think any of you have employees.
No, you were talking about at the beginning of it. It was a 501-something. I'm sorry. I made a note, but I can't get to it.
Oh, it was a 501c3.
501c3.
Right.
What is that? Tax-exempt.
That is a tax-exempt. FCB is a 501c3, Lorian. If you're working under FCB, you're working under our 501c3
okay.
Number.
I just want that to be clear. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That's fine. Well,
if you're working under theirs, they would be the one filling out the 990. You wouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. Artist, thank you so much for coming for 2 months in a row.